Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Ayin Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins four lines from the bottom of Daf Ayin Beis Amud Beis. The Gemara opens with a quote from the Mishnah back on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis that spoke about the eight clothing that are unique to the Kohen Gadol, and it also mentioned Be'elu Nish'olim Be'urim V'tumim, while wearing these eight garments, specifically the choshen that sat attached to the ephod, he was consulted when a question was posed to the Urim V'tumim. The Urim V'tumim is a reference to the stones that were laid into the choshen, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, that through a miraculous effort were used to answer questions posed to them by a king, by the Beis Din, or by someone that the Tzibor needed. Before beginning the actual Gemara, we glance at the markings that are explained on the side of the Gemara. There are no say Mivne heading. You'll notice a bow tie. That's marked number one here, and on the next Amud, you can see on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, the lower part of the Amud, there is a number two. These are two deos, two opinions, b'koyen moshuach muchama, that regard the Kohen that was anointed to accompany the people, the Jewish people, into battle, and his role is defined and explained and described by the Torah, how he accompanies them into battle, and he's called a moshuach muchama. Of course, we're not going to get into the details of what he says and what exactly his role is. That you can look into Sefer Devarim in the Chumash to see further information about that. However, we do mention that the Moshuach Milchoma has certain unique characteristics that set him apart from a Kohen Hedyo, from a standard Kohen, that we'll see about in the Gemara. Anyway, we have two approaches regarding the Moshuach Milchoma, as we will see in the Gemara of Dimi and later Ravin. And we continue in our note, we say, V'dino l'gabi shmoyin megodim shel kohen gadol. We'll be focusing on the Moshuach Milchoma and that he, what his, let's see, role is insofar as wearing the eight clothing of the Kohen Gadol, the same eight clothing. A diamond with a shaded in tip will be used to highlight what we have, lahavlid es ikur, the ikur, the main point. You'll see the main point of difference between Rav Dimi and Ravin later on. And then you'll see a house marking that are kushios al Rav Dimi, so that you see one over here and several more, a couple more appear on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. Now we turn to the Gemara. Ki also Rav Dimi Omar. When Rav Dimi came, he told us, "Begodim shekohen gadol mishamish bohen, moshuach milchama mishamish bohen." The eight clothing that the Kohen Gadol wears in service while serving in the Beis Hamikdash, a moshuach milchama, that same individual is appointed to lead the Jewish people into battle, the Kohen that accompanies them, that is, he, if he wants to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, as in the role of a Kohen, he too will wear the eight garments. Shenemar uvigde hakedesh asher la'aron yu levonov acharov. The pasuk literally is, and the Kohen Gadol clothing will be for his sons afterwards, for the Kohen Gadol's sons afterwards. But here we're going to darshan it in a style that's not the simple meaning, but rather the Gemara says lemi shebo acharov begedulo acharov. Again, lemi shebo begedulo acharov. You have the Kohen Godol standing at the top of the pyramid of Kohanim, and under him, right under him, is the Moshuach Milchama. So that's what the word Acharov in the Pasuk means. Bonav Acharov, Kohanim, that follow him in greatness. You have the Kohen Godol, and he who follows him in greatness is the Moshuach Milchama. Mosiv Rav Ado Bar Ahava V'Amri Lo Kedi. Rav Ado, in some versions, Amri Lo, some other versions, Kedi means without a name, a question is posed. We have a Tanaic source that continues to the third line from the top of Ayin Gimel. The source itself will require the Gemara that follows to explain what the question is. So first of all, let's read the source. Yochol Yehe Benoi Shel Moshuach Milchama Mishamish Tachtov Kederach Shebenoi Shekoyin Godol Mishamish Tachtov. Shall the son of a Moshuach Milchama serve under him, in other words, replace him when the father passes on, so the son takes over? That's true with regard to a Kohen Godol. Does that same practice apply to a Moshuach Milchama? So once again, the question is, do we say by a Moshuach Milchama, just like we say by a Kohen Godol, that the son of a Kohen Godol replaces his father? So too, in the case of a Moshuach Milchama, when the Moshuach Milchama Kohen dies, so his son will replace him. Talmud Lomar, so the Gemara continues at the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. The Torah says, Shivas Yomim Yu B'Shem HaKohen Tachtov Mibonov Asher Yavoi El Oyel Moyed. This is a pasuk from Shmois that says that he shall wear the seven days the Kohen that replaces his father, the Kohen that enters the Oyel Moyed. And that idea of entering the Oyel Moyed is a reference to the Yom Kippur service during which the Kohen Godol enters. And Rashi says at the top, or actually before we read the Rashi, the Brisa says, Misha Roy Lovo El Oyel Moyed. When do we say, as the Pasuk says, HaKohen Tachtov Mi Bonov, that a son replaces a father? That is with regard to someone who is fit to enter the Oyel Moed. He was fit to do the Yom Kippur service. Who is that? That is the Kohen Godol. And why is it the Kohen Godol? Because, well, he is the one that wears the eight clothing. The Rashi at the top says, Talmud Lomar, Sheyovo El Oyel Moed, Mi Sheroi Lovo El Moed, L'chapir B'Kodesh B'Yom HaKippurim, to serve in the atoning capacity, or to that does the ritual that enables atonement to set in on Yom Kippur. Alav ani omer loch tachtov mi bonov. Regarding him, the one that does the Yom Kippur service, he will have his children replace him upon his death. Shebnoya tachtov yotza zeh, to the exclusion of this one, she'eno roi, he is not fit. The love Kohen Godol Hu. He is not the Kohen Godol. Now, we continue in the Gemara, because so far this is not 100% clear. What's the question over here? But here the Gemara goes on and says, Ve'im Esau, if, as Rav Dimi says, that the Moshuach Milchama also wears the eight garments, Mechse Chosi, he is fit to enter the Oyel Moed. He would be fit to enter the Oyel Moed to do the Yom Kippur service. So if we look in Rashi at the second line from the top, V'im Esau, the Bishmoyne Megodim Hu Mishamesh Kol Hashana, if it's so that the Moshuach Milchama would wear the eight garments year-round, Hai Nami Mechse Chosi, he too would be fit to do the Yom Kippur service. Dechsiv B'Yom HaKippurim, the Pasuk says regarding Yom Kippur service, who is eligible? It says, V'chipir HaKohen Hashim Shach Oisei V'asher Yimale Es Yodoi. V'chol milu yodayim. This pasuk used the expression yamale es yodo at the end of the pasuk. When you see that expression milu yodayim, literally the filling of the hands, but it doesn't mean anything to do with filling of the hands, but rather al yedei begodim hu. When you see the yamale es yodo means, it means with the special eight clothing. Kirchtiv uvidei hakodesh asher li aroin. So if you put this information together, the pasuk that gives license to do the Yom Kippur service indicates that the Yom Kippur functionary is the one who wears the eight garments. If that be the case, the Moshuach Mechama then, according to Rav Dimi, would be wearing the eight garments. The question then is, if you look at this Tanaic source that we read, and true, it wasn't so clear in the source itself, but the Tanaic source is saying that only the Kohen Gadol is the one who's fit to do the Yom Kippur service, and as such, only in his case does the son replace the father. But if Rav Dimi is correct, the Moshuach Mechama, by virtue of the fact that he too wears the eight garments, he too is fit to do the Yom Kippur service, and then that would indicate that his son too would fill his role. But the source said at the bottom of the bottom line of Ayin Beis Amid Beis said, "Yochol Yeh Benoi Shel Moshuach Mechama Shamish Tachtov." Is that so? And we're saying no, it's not so. Well, the Gemara, we'll just read the question once again. V'im Isa, if it's so, like Rav Dimi, Mechsechazi, he would be fit to serve in the Oyel Moed, and then, as it would follow from that, that his son would in fact, yes, be able to replace the father. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Hochi Ka Omar. Rav Nachman explains that the source is to be understood as follows. We are going to accept Rav Dimi that the Moshuach Mechama wears the eight garments, but the source still indicates that his son is not automatically going to replace the father. Because the source says, Kol She'ikur Mashiachos Moed. He whose primary anointing is to serve as Kohen Gadol, his son will replace him. Yotzozeh, to the exclusion of the Moshuach Mechama, where we don't say that his main anointing was for the Moshuach Mechama role. His main anointing is to serve as Moshuach Mechama. Parenthetically, he also happens to wear the eight garments. Meisvei, another question. Moshuach Mechama eino mishamesh lo ba'arbo al kekoin hedyot loy b'shmoyne kekoin gadol. We dashed underline the main problem. Here you have a Tanaic source countering Rav Dimi, indicating the Kohen Moshuach Mechama does not wear the eight garments. Rav Dimi claimed he does. Omar le Abaye, so Abaye responds. He says, Elo zar mashvis le. By him not having the chance or the ability to wear the four garments nor the eight garments, you're making him like a non-Kohen. Because in the realm of Kahuna, they're either the four garments for the simple or standard Kohen and eight for the Kohen Gadol. Here he's not entitled to either one according to the source. So the source as it is cannot be taken at face value. Ela. What the source is really saying is Kekayin Gadol, he doesn't wear the eight garments Mishum Eva, because of we'll call this a rabbinic consideration of creating strife between him, the Moshuach Mechama, and the Kohen Gadol. But and now and here we have to emphasize the main point. Mida Oraisa, from a Torah perspective, he is enabled or fit, qualified to wear the eight garments, like Rav Dimi. What the source is addressing is a rabbinic level consideration. And he is restricted from wearing the garments so as not to serve as a sore point or competition to the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Hedyot, he will not wear four garments as a Kohen Hedyot, Mishumalin B'Kodesh V'lo Moridin, because of a concept known as we rise in sanctity as opposed to descend in sanctity. And since he did rise to the Moshuach Mechama position, which does entitle him to wear the eight special clothing characteristic of a Kohen Gadol, we don't now have him wear fewer. That would be a descent in Kedusha, which is not acceptable. Omar Lay, another question. Note, this is a long question, and it's coming on the heels of the answer we just gave for Rav Dimi. We defended Rav Dimi by saying that because of Eva, that's the only reason he, the Kohen Moshiach Muhammad, does not wear the eight garments. Eva being, as we said, a sense of strain or strife, friction. Eva can also mean hate in other contexts that would be created if he would, the Moshiach Muhammad, would wear those eight garments. We're going to ask a question. Now, the essence of the following question is, we're going to show you a Tanaic source that does not hold Eva to be a consideration. That a Tanaic source that doesn't view Eva as an issue. So if we were correct in defending Rav Dimi by saying that Eva was the only consideration of the previous source, thereby depriving the Moshiach Muhammad of the eight garments, if I show you a source that doesn't reckon with Eva as a consideration, in describing the Moshiach Muhammad, you would expect it to say that he can wear the eight garments. And yet we're going to see in this Tanaic source, which is chock full of information, but we have to focus on the main point, we're going to see in this source, even though there is no Eva consideration, still the Moshiach Muhammad does not wear the eight garments. Take note of the fact that this is a long question. We turn to the Gemara. Omar le Rav Ado bar Abba le Rava. So Rav Ado addresses Rav and says, "V'haytana de les le Eva." We have the following Tana that doesn't consider Eva in issuing a ruling. The Eva is a non-issue. V'lo kamashamesh, and yet the Moshiach Muhammad does not wear the eight garments. The Sanya. And as we said before, this source has a lot of tangential or extra information that's not necessary for our immediate understanding of the source. So what we want to do before reading the entire source, we skip to the last couple lines of the source. You see some double underlining under the word V'kulon. And at the last V'kulon, which would be three, four lines from the end of the source, it says, V'kulon ein noyagaz b'meshulach melchoma. All of the above-mentioned points don't apply to Moshiach Muhammad, which means that he will not wear the eight garments, and there are only 5 points that a Moshiach Muhammad has in common with a Kohen Gadol, and the source goes on to enumerate them. And this very source indicated beforehand that Eva is not a consideration. And you see, therefore, a source saying Eva is not a consideration, and the Kohen Moshiach Muhammad is not wearing the eight garments. And that will be our question on Rav Dimi. So now we continue from the beginning of the source. Desanya, Dvorim Shebein, Kohen Gadol, LeKohen Hedron. And this, by the way, serves as our topic heading on the side. We have a Tatnose as a subtopic, where we've written in, Hevdelim Bein Kohen Gadol, differences between the Kohen Gadol, LeKohen Hedron, and there's a Moshiach Sha'avar, that's a Kohen Gadol replacement figure, that if in the event that some tumah, some default affected the Kohen Gadol, he replaces him, temporary replacement. He's called the Moshiach Sha'avar, and also Moshiach Muhammad will be referred to in this source. So the source opens by saying the following are the differences between a Kohen Gadol and a Kohen Hedyot. Par habo al kol ha-mitzvahs. Only the Kohen Gadol brings the sacrifice known as the par habo al kol ha-mitzvahs. Is a situation where a Kohen Gadol errs in a legal ruling and violates a type of avera that carries with it a kores penalty. He would bring this special sacrifice known as the par habo al kol ha-mitzvahs. So only the Kohen Gadol does that, not so in the case of a Kohen Hedyot. If a Kohen Hedyot violated an Avera like that, so he would bring the standard Korban Chatas, a Se'ira, a Kivsur, a Se'ira, a goat or a sheep offering. Upar Yom HaKippurim, only the Kohen Godol is entitled to offer the par of Yom Kippur as opposed to a Kohen Hedyot. Vasiris Ha'efa, a daily meal offering known as a Minchas Chavitin. In the case of Avelus, a Kohen Godol is Lo Poreh V'Lo Poreim. Lo Poreh means he doesn't allow his hair to grow as is a requirement by everyone else. And Lo Poreim, he doesn't tear his clothing. Avol Poreim Hu Milamato. He tears from the bottom edge of the garment, the hedyot milamalo, as opposed to a kohen hedyot who tears from the upper part of the garment. The ein mitamel krovov, in the event that one of the close relatives of a kohen gadol dies, he does not defile himself as is the case as of a kohen hedyot. Umitsuva al habasula, he has a positive command in the Torah to marry a virgin woman. Umuzer al hoalmona, and he is warned against marrying a widow, which is not the case in the of a kohen hedyot. A standard kohen is allowed to marry a widow. His restriction is limited to a divorcee. And another characteristic of a kohen gadol, in contrast to a kohen hedyot, umachsiras harotzeach, in the event that an unwitting murder, a murder b'shogeg, took place, and the murderer ran to an ir miklat, he is released from the ir miklat, from the city of refuge, when the kohen gadol dies. Umakriv oinein veinu ochel veinu cholek, kohen gadol, even though a close relative of his died, and that relative hasn't even been buried yet, creating a state of aninus, the kohen gadol nevertheless continues to offer sacrifices, but he does not eat from them, nor does he receive a portion of them. The kohen hedyot, though, if he is an onein, he doesn't serve at all in the Beis HaMikdash during that time. The notel chelek barosh, the kohen gadol, when a korban, a sacrifice, is being divided, he takes the first portion. Umakriv chelek barosh, and in offering sacrifices, he can be the first one to offer. Umishamesh b'shmoyne kelim, he wears the eight kelim, or the eight garments. Upotar al tumas mikdash v'kadoshav, if he violated the prohibitions of defilement in the Beis HaMikdash and with regard to Korbanah, so he is exempt from the standard sacrifice that is brought under those occasions. The chol avodis Yom HaKippurim eino ksheros elabo, and all Yom Kippur services in the Beis HaMikdash are acceptable or valid only through him. The kulon noyegus murma begodim, all of the above mentioned characteristics or descriptions are applicable to a kohen gadol who became a kohen gadol at a period of time when the oil of anointment no longer was used. Toward the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, that oil was put out of service. And in order to become a kohen gadol, you would become thusly by donning the eight garments. That's called meruba begodim. Meruba from the expression of a lot of, the many clothing, as opposed to the four of a kohen hedyot. So all of the above mentioned applies to a kohen gadol that served at the end of the first Beis HaMikdash period, and certainly in the second Beis HaMikdash period, when there was no more shemen hamishcha around. Chutz mipar habo al kol hamitzvos. The exception being that special cow offering in the event that he erred in a legal ruling concerning an avera, where he violated an avera that carries with it a kores penalty. So the meruba begodim does not bring that sacrifice called par habal kol hamitzvos, and that's because the Torah, when describing that particular sacrifice, it addresses the kohen gadol who was anointed with the anointing oil. The kulon noyegus b'mishuch she'avar, all of the above apply to a replacement kohen gadol, including the wearing of the eight clothing. Chutz mipar yom hakipurim vasir seifa. There are two exceptions where the moshuch shavar, he was the temporary kohen gadol, Nevertheless, when Yom Kippur comes, he does not bring the Yom Kippur cow offering. Only the official Kohen Gadol brings that. Nor does he bring the daily Minchas Chavita, known as the Asir Se'efa. The Asir Se'efa is actually a measure. It's a certain measure of flour used for that particular meal offering. But it's called the Minchas Chavitin. The main point, though, is that which we wrote in between the lines. This Moshuach Sha'avar, he's not the official Kohen Gadol, he was a replacement Kohen Gadol. When the original Kohen Gadol comes back into service, he is retired, so to speak. What do we see, though? He does, when he serves, he wears the eight garments. So what do we see from here? We see this Tana isn't worried about Avov. He's not worried about a sense of strife between the official Kohen Gadol, who certainly wears the eight garments, and someone else who's going to be wearing them. Here you have someone else that's going to be wearing the eight garments. It's okay. Doesn't seem to be bothered by Ava. The Kulon Einayagas Moshuach Mechama. The Moshuach Mechama type Kohen, all of the above that we mentioned regarding a Kohen Gadol don't apply to him, including the fact he will not wear the eight garments. Chutz Michamisha Dvarim Ha'amurim B'Parsha, with the exception of 5 points that are mentioned in the context of a Moshuach Mechama, and these 5 points we saw above, we described them, so we're just going to read them here. Lo Porea, Velo Poreim, Velo Metame L'Kroivov, Umitzuva Al HaBasula, Umuzer Al Hu'Almona. Rabbi Yehuda holds a 6th point, then that's the issue of the Shogeg murderer leaving the Yermiklot, that the death of the Kohen Moshuach Mechama could release him. The Chachamim say he doesn't get released with the death of the Moshuach Mechama. The main point, though, and we're going to go over it again, what's the main point? Here you have the Moshuach Mechama does not wear the eight garments, even though this Tana doesn't consider Eva as a reason of any significance. Does that not pose a problem for Rav Dimi? Rav Dimi claimed that, and we said this in light of Tanaic sources we saw before, that by letter of the law, the Moshuach Mechama does wear the eight garments. The source that said he doesn't, that was only a rabbinic consideration of Eva. Here we see Eva as a non-issue, and yet the Moshuach Mechama does not wear the eight garments. The Gemara answers, Ki les le Eva, the Tanoim that indicate Eva is not a consideration, that's Bidikavose. That's when it's someone that is his equal. The Kohen Gadol's equal. What do we mean by that? If the Kohen Gadol became Tomei and someone replaced him as official Kohen Gadol, so we can say he is the equal of the official Kohen Gadol. So, being that he's his equal, so that won't cause any sense of competition or strife. He realizes that this is someone else that served as a real Kohen Gadol, so I am not going to be jealous of him. B'dezutar minei islei. However, when you're dealing with someone of an inferior status, a Moshuach Mechama is a lesser status than an official Kohen Gadol. In such a case, his wearing of the eight garments would infuriate or cause a strain to the real Kohen Gadol. You can see that we have a bracketed section here, and on the side there's a starred note. Besocha segraim kemis machloikis imdina shiravdimi nema yedei Rabbi Yochanan v'yesh bo shnei lishonos mi sover shirav Yochanan amra. There is a technical discussion in the bracketed section concerning the basis of Ravdimi's claim that a Moshuach Mechama wears the eight garments while serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Was that said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan? After the brackets, we then see Ravin's approach to the Moshuach Mechama and his connection with the eight garments, which is different than that of Rav Dimi. That having been said, the structure hopefully is clear. We continue in the bracketed section. Yosef Rabbi Avohu, v'ka'omar lo, l'ha shmaitzu mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Avohu said over that which Rav Dimi said, and he said it in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Ahadrinu Rabbi Ami v'Rav Asi l'Apayu. Rav Ami and Rav Asi, who were students of Rabbi Yochanan, they turned their heads away in disgust, in opposition to what was just said. So the expression Ahadrinu is turning away of one's head, clearly indicating displeasure without uttering it verbally. So what were they doing? They were trying to demonstrate that Rabbi Yochanan never said such a thing. He never said that the Kayin Moshuach Muchoma shall serve wearing 8 garments. Ika Diamri, another version of the story is Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba Omra, that not Rabbi Avo, but Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said over Rav Dimi's teaching, Vadrinu, Rabami, Rabasi Lapayu, and they turn their way in their heads away in displeasure. Maskif lo Rav Papa. Rav Papa then commenting on these versions of who said it, he said, Bishlomo Rabbi Avo, I can understand the version, the first version, of Rabbi Avo having said it and Rav Ami and Rav Asi turning away without verbally objecting. Why didn't they verbally object? Mishum Yakro de Bei Kesar. Because they paid respect to Rabbi Avo as being attached to the home or the Caesar's government. Rabbi Avo was in addition to his being a great Talmudic scholar, he was also a representative of the Jewish people in the royal house. So being that he carried with him this official position, they in respect him, even though they disagreed, they didn't verbally express it. Elo Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, but if the version number 2 of the story is accurate, that Rabbi Chiya is the one that said over Rav Dimi's teaching, arousing the displeasure of Rav Ami and Rav Asi, Neimru Le Meimar. Why didn't they say straight out, Lo Amar Rav Yochanan Achi, Rav Yochanan didn't say that. Alright, so we leave that as a parenthetical discussion regarding others who said over Rav Dimi's teaching in the name of Rav Yochanan. All that having been said, we just repeat the main point. Rav Dimi claimed, we saw at the bottom of Ayin Beis Amid Beis, that a Moshuach Muchoma, when he serves in the Beis HaMikdash, he will serve wearing the 8 garments. We saw that that claim went up against a couple of Tanaic sources. We saw responses to that. We saw Rabbi Yochanan having been claimed to have said such a thing, but Rav Ami and Rav Asi didn't approve of that. Ki also Ravin Omar Nishal Itmar. When Ravin came, he said that the Moshuach Muchoma would wear the 8 garments only when a question was being posed to the Urim V'Tumim. Once again, not to say that Moshuach Muchoma would serve while wearing the 8 garments, but the Moshuach Muchoma, when a question was posed, and certainly questions regarding going into battle were of significance, questions of that nature were significant enough to pose to the Urim V'Tumim, the special stones set into the Kohen Gadol's breastplate that would had letters of the names of the 12 tribes inscribed into these stones. They would miraculously light up or pushed up or bulging in responding to the questions posed to them. When that was necessary, the questions posed to the Urim V'Tumim, so the Moshuach Muchoma would don the 8 garments, including the Urim V'Tumim. We continue in the Gemara. Itmar, or that is a Tanya Nami Hachi, a Tanaic source that supports Ravin's approach. Begadim Shekohen Gadol Meshamesh Bohen, the 8 garments that a Kohen Gadol wears when doing service in the Beis HaMikdash, Moshuach Milchoma Nishal Bohem. He was asked while wearing them. And we dashed under Nishal Bohem. This was the unique point of Ravin as opposed to Rav Dimi. Tanu Rabbanan. And now we have a Tanaic source that focuses on the Urim V'Tumim. We have on the side in Usei a topic heading, Ketzat Sholim B'Urim V'Tumim. How are questions posed to these stones? Again, these stones and their ability to answer was something of a miraculous nature. It was a, we'll say, a form of communication between man and the Almighty, where these stones would offer answers. And this is a situation that, in a certain respect, we'll say parallels prophecy, even though we'll point out that there is a difference. But we'll call it in the falling under the general realm of a prophetic response. So the source that we're about to learn deals with how were questions posed to them. We'll see Ramat HaKol, the voice level needed in asking them. Ein Sholim Shnei Dvorim Ke'echad. And we'll also see that you don't ask two questions at once, two questions without getting a response in between. You don't pose two questions immediately. V'im Yesh Tzorach Sholim, if there is some pressing need because of something of an imminent danger, so the two questions could be posed without waiting for a response in between. In other words, the two questions we pose back to back, and then the response would be forthcoming. Apparently that would save a little bit of time. We turn now to the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan, Ketzat Sholem, how were questions posed? HaShoel, the Shoel will be the king or the head of the court, or some, it could be a military general, someone that the Tzibor needs. So HaShoel, the questioner, Ponov Klapei Nishal, he was facing the one being asked, he would be facing the Kohen, VaNishal, Ponov Klapei Shechina, and the Nishal, the Kohen, was facing the Urim V'Tumim. Again, he was wearing the Urim V'Tumim, so he was in effect facing the Shechina. The Shechina is the divine presence as associated with the Urim V'Tumim. HaShoyel Oimer, the Shoyel, the questioner would ask, and what happens now in this source, Psukim are quoted from the book of Samuel, from Sefer Shmuel, and the questions quoted, or the Psukim cited from there, deal with Dovin HaMelech being in a battle situation. So the questioner would ask, Erdof Acharei Hagdud Hazeh, should I pursue this military group? A Gdud is one of the breakdowns in a military effort. You have brigades and platoons and etc. and so forth. So it's a breakdown of a military unit. So he's asking, shall I pursue the Gdud? Vanishal Omer, and the Nishal, the response, the responder would say, Koi Omar Hashem Ale Vahatzlach. Thusly says the Almighty, go up and you will be successful. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Tzorach Lomar Koi Omar Hashem. It's not necessary for that. Maybe it's a function because it's obvious. Ela Ale Vahatzlach. So the letters on the Kohen Gadol's breastplate would light up or bulge out, as we'll see later, indicating Alei Vahatzlach, go up and you'll be successful. And as we said, these are, in effect, incidents that really took place, as you can see in the book of Shmuel. Ein Sholim B'Koil, one doesn't ask the question in a raised voice, in an audible voice, Shenemar V'Shoal Loi. The question is low, meaning him, in a personal sense. Rashi says, Mashma loy levadoi shein shomea elohu, that no one hears it other than the one who is raising the question. But on the other hand, velo mahara belibo, it's not something that one just thinks in his mind. He doesn't just think the question in his mind, but rather he articulates it with his lips. Shenemar, and the pasuk says, there's a girsa on the side that says, Shenemar al piv yetzu. Rashi has his explanation based on the Gemara's text, but for our purposes it means that the question is articulated lip-wise. The words are enunciated, but not in an audible fashion. Elo kederech she'omro Chana b'tfilosa, but rather as Chana in her famous prayer spoke to the Almighty. Shinema v'chano hi medaberes al liba. Chana, the mother of the prophet Shmuel, she prayed and did so in this fashion. Medaberes, but al liba. She was speaking, but only she could hear. Any onlooker would see someone moving their lips and not hearing words come out. Ein sholim shnei dvarim ke'echod. Two questions are not posed immediately back to back. Rashi says, rather, after the first question is answered, then you would pose the second question. V'im shual ein machzirin elo echad. And if a person, if they would pose two questions, he would get an answer to only one of them. V'ein machzirin lo elo rishon. And the only question that would be answered would be the first of those two questions. Shenemar. And a pasuk is quoted, and at first glance, when learning this section, it's not going to make immediate sense. But what happened was, two questions were posed. David HaMelech posed two questions. Hayaz Giruni Bale Ki'ilo Biyado, Hayered Shaul. He asked, there was a battle in which David. In which David was threatened, and he ran to a place called Keilah for refuge. He was threatened by Shaul, and David asked, will they hand me over to Shaul, and will Shaul actually attack Keilah in order to get me? Vayomer Hashem Yered. And Hashem answered just one of them, and he says, he will come down, Shaul will come to pursue you in Keilah. So this was just cited to show that if you ask two questions, you get a response to only one. Okay, you see, only one of the two questions was answered. However, there's a technical problem here. The source had said that the singular answer is going to be to the first question was posed. In this case, the singular answer was given to the second question. That is going to be dealt with now in the bracketed section. If you skip the bracketed section, the source continues with the laws concerning the Urim V'Tumim, and it says, after the brackets, the fourth line from the top of Amud Beis, V'im hutzu chadover l'shnayim achzirin l'shnayim. If there was some pressing need to raise the two questions back to back and get answers to them, so then you would get the two answers. We'll get back to that momentarily. Let's go now back over the bracketed section. Veho Amris, didn't you say Ein Machzirin Elo Rishon? So in the example that was given in the source, there was one answer given, but it was given to the second question. But you said a moment before that the one answer that was given in the event two questions were asked was a response to the first question. The Gemara answers, David Shoal Shelo Kaseder. David asked two questions, and we read them. We labeled them Aleph and Beis. The first was, will the Bali Kila hand me over? And the second one was, will Shaul initiate a battle with Kila in order to in his pursuit of me? What David HaMelech should have asked first was, will Shaul initiate a military effort against Keilah in pursuing me? And then, once he does that, would Bali Keilah, when under threat, hand me over to Shaul's men? David HaMelech, though, asked out of order. So that's what the Gemara is telling us, what Dovel Shoal at the top of Amud Beis, Shelo Keseder. He asked his questions in the wrong order. V'chziro lo Keseder. And the Urim V'Tumim answered what should have been the first question. Keseder means they answered, the Urim V'Tumim answered him in the proper order. Namely, they answered the first question that should have been asked. The Kavan Shiyoda Shishal Shelo Keseder, once David realized that he had asked out of order, Chozar Vishal Keseder, he, David, then asked what should have been the second question. He then re-asked it. Shenemar Hayazgiru Bale Kila Oisi Ves Anoshai Biad Shaul. And you can see that this is Pasuk Yud Beis. the previous pasuk, where he spoke about Hayaz Giruni, was pasuk Yud Aleph. That was verse 11. This is verse 12. So he's basically asking the same question that should have been asked second in position. Will they, in other words, now that I know Shaul will attack Keilah, my next question is, will they hand me over to him? And the Almighty answers, yes, they will. So if you want to basically, so now David understood, if he wants to save himself, he better escape before Shaul gets there. We continue in the source, Ve'im Hutzruch Adavar Lishnayim, if it's necessary to ask the two questions without time to relate, to wait for a response between the two, so it will answer the two questions. That's Machzirin Lo Shnayim. Shenemar, and this is another military event. It's in chapter 30, Shmuel Aleph, Perek Lamed Posuk Ches, Vayishal David Bashem Lemor. And David consulted, Ha'erdof Acheri HaGdud Hazeh Ha'asigenu, shall I pursue this military unit? It was a military unit of the enemy. Shall I pursue them? Will I reach them? So two questions, pursuing them and reaching them and overtaking them. Vayomer, and the Urim V'Tumim responded, Redof. You see, that corresponds to the first question, Ha'erdof, we saw just the line before. So it says, yes, pursue them, Redof. Ki haseg tasig vatzel tatzil. You will reach them and be saved. The Afalpi Shigzeras Novi Choseres, even though when a Novi is, we'll say, even though with regard to Novi prophecy, whatever the prophet is told can be reversed. And Rashi cites as an example of that the story involving Yonah, who was initially given prophecy that Nineveh would be overturned. So that did not happen in the literal sense, so that the prophecy was reversed. Gzeras Urim V'tumim Eino Choseres. That which comes forth from the Urim V'tumim does not get reversed. Shenemar B'mishpat Ho'urim. That's a pasuk in the context of Urim V'tumim, indicating just like judgment, once judgment is rendered, so it doesn't get undone, it sticks, so too with the response of the Urim V'tumim. Lomo Nikro Shmon Urim V'Tumim. Why are they called that? Urim, the word Urim comes from the word light, Shemeirim Es Divrehem. Rashi says, Shemeirim Es Divrehem, Meforshim Es Divrehem. They explain their words. And Tumim She Mashlimin Es Divrehem, which Rashi takes to mean that their response does not get reversed. Ein Gzeirosim Choseres. In the case of Givas Binyamin, this was another episode in the Tanakh. Why does it appear that that their words were lo hishlimu? Rashi on the third line from the top says lo hishlimu sha'amru alem b'shnei yomim arishon. There were several days of battle between the Klal Yisrael and the tribe of Binyamin, and in the there were actually three battles that took place, and in the first two, it says Alu Elov, the Urim V'Tumim said go into battle, and Vinoflu, and they were defeated. Tribe of Binyamin defeated Klal Yisrael, and yet Klal Yisrael asked, should we go into battle? And they said, yes, go into battle. So it seems that the Urim V'Tumim indicated to go into battle, which one might have thought meant go into battle and be successful, and they were not successful. So the Gemara answers, Hein shelo bichanu im lenatzeach im lihinotzach. It was their fault, so to speak. They didn't ask the Urim V'Tumim, will we be successful, will we defeat them or be defeated? They didn't ask that. So it was their fault, not, so to speak, any shortcoming in the Urim V'Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim were asked, shall we go into battle? And the answer was, yes, go into battle. Ubachroina Shabichanu Hiskimu. And in the third battle, where they actually did consult regarding success, they got a response, you will be successful, you will defeat Binyamin, and so it was. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, Upinchos ben Elozer ben Aaron Oimed Lifona of Binyamin Bayomim Oheim Lamor. Pinchos was the Kohen Gadol at that time, and he was the one that was donning the Urim V'Tumim. And the question was posed, Ha'osif Od Lotzeis L'Mochama Im B'nei Binyamin Achi Im Echdal. Shall we go into battle or not? Vayomer Hashem, Alu Ki Mochor Etnenu B'Yodecha. And here you see we dashed underline in this third battle, so they responded, and you will be successful. So in the first two battles, the Gemara said, Heim Shelo Bichanu. Rashi on the fourth line from the top says, Urim V'tumim Lo Pirshulam V'shneimim Rishonim Alu V'Haslich Li. Urim V'tumim didn't say you will be successful. All they said in the first 2 days is go into battle. As far as success, that wasn't an issue that the Urim V'tumim even addressed. They didn't answer that in the first 2 days. On the third day, so the Urim V'Tumim is spelled out, you will be successful, and that's what in fact happened. Ketzad Nasis, the Gemara asks, so how did it actually answer the questions? Rabbi Yochanan Omer Boltos, the letters would bulge out, the letters forming the words that would be the response bulged out. Reish Lakish Omer Mitstarfos, they miraculously moved around, forming the words. They joined up one letter with the next to form the words of response. The Gemara asks a couple of questions that we see with a triangle, double underlined marking. On the side, we've indicated these are She'elois, Binyan Chisaron Oisios, B'Shemes HaShvatim Kadesh Yuchalanos. In order to answer questions, you've got to have the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet available. But amongst the 12 tribes whose names were inscribed on the stones, there were actually several letters that you didn't find amongst all 12 tribes' names. So the Gemara asks, V'ha Loksiv Behu Tzadi, the letter Tzadi wasn't present. In fact, the Gra adds that Ches and Kuf were also lacking. So what do you do about that? So Omer of Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Avram Yitzchak V'Yankiv Ksiv Shom. In the names of the forefathers were also there, and by having the name Yitzchak, we accomplished the lack of the Tzadi and the lack of the Ches. Question, V'Holo Ksiv Tes. You're lacking the letter Tess, even with the names of all tribes, 12 tribes, plus Avram, Yitzchak, and Yankiv, the letter Tess doesn't appear. Omar of Acha Bar Yankiv, Shivte Yeshurun Ksiv Sham. You also had this expression, Shivte Yeshurun, there, and that accomplishes the Tess as well. Meisve, we have a question. And it says, Kol kohen she'eino medabe b'ruach hakodesh u'shchina shira olav, any kohen that doesn't have the ability to speak with divine inspiration and the divine spirit does not dwell upon him, ain shalin bo, he is not consulted. Sherei shal tzadok v'osalo, tzadok was a kohen at the time that David HaMelech was in retreat from Avshalom, his son that had rebelled and attempted to take over the kingdom. So David HaMelech was accompanied by Tzadok HaKohen, and Tzadok was presented with a question, and the Urim V'Tumim answered. If Yosser, who was the previous Kayin Gadol, he was asked the question and it didn't respond. Shinemar Vayalev Yosser Atoim Kol Ha'om V'chulei. The point being that there was a problem of allegiance. We'll say that if Yosser was guilty of, and as a result, the divine spirit had left him and settled upon Tzadok, who had accompanied David HaMelech in his retreat. And what's the point though over here? So Rashi explains, we dashed underline this point in the Rashi, from the fact that you needed a kohen who had divine inspiration, so it must be that it was through that force, that strength that the answer given by the Urim V'Tumim was understood, and not because of letters that bulged or letters that rearranged themselves. Because if the letters were bulging or rearranging themselves, what did you need to have Ruach HaKodesh for? Yet this Tanaic source says you need a Ruach HaKodesh. The Gemara answers, both are true. Siyue Hava Messiah Bahadayu. Siyue has to do with assistance. That means that only if the Kohen wearing them had this divine spirit in him, only then would the letters bulge out or rearrange themselves. You needed to combine this level of piety in order for the Urim V'Tumim to fulfill their function. The Ein Shoyalin Elo Lamelech. The questions were not posed to the Urim V'Tumim other than if you were a king or a court or someone that the Tzibor needed, someone that was necessary for the community. Mino hani mini, from where do we know this? Omer Rabbi Avod, Yomakro. The Pasuk says, Ufnei Elozer HaKoyin Yamoid, V'sho'alo B'mishpat Ho'urim. The Pasuk goes on to say, Lifnei Hashem, Alpiv Yetsu, Alpiv Yavo, Hu V'chol B'nei Yisrael Itoi, V'chol Ha'eda. So this Pasuk describes the Urim V'Tumim, and we now darshan the different parts of the Pasuk. Who? In this pasuk, the word who was mentioned, and of course you can only appreciate this if you read that which is the continuation, that which we wrote in between lines, the continuation of that very pasuk, who ze melech. That's a reference to the king. The reason for that is, as Rashi points out, that the subject of that pasuk, the questioner, was Yehoshua, who occupied the position of leadership, i.e. the king. The Chol B'nei Yisrael Ito, which is a reference also in the Pasuk, Ze Moshuach Muhammad. That was the Kohen who was anointed to accompany them into battle. The Chol Ha'eda, Zu Sanhedrin, the High Court. Only those kind of officials had the privilege of posing questions to the Urim V'Tumim. As you can see, that completes the seventh perek of Yuma, and now we continue with the last perek, the eighth perek of Yuma. And this perek is dedicated to the halacha lemaisa aspects of Yom Kippur. Whereas the first seven prokim of this mesichta were focused on the Kohen Gadol and his Beis Hamikdash role, particularly in the realm of Yom Kippur, here we have the last perek dedicated to the laws of Yom Kippur on an ongoing basis, even with the unfortunate situation of not having a Beis Hamikdash. So the Mishnah says, Yom HaKippurim Osur B'Achilo B'Shtia. Yom HaKippur is forbidden in eating and drinking, and we're listing 5 points. We're linking together Achilo B'Shtia as number one. Number two, Beruchitza, no bathing is allowed. U'Besicha, smearing with ointments. Of course, ointments that are of a pleasurable nature. Ubanila sasano, no leather shoe wearing. Ubitasha shamita, intimacy with one's wife. All five of these are forbidden on Yom Kippur. Vamelech vakalo yurchatsu espenem, a king or a newly wed woman, a bride, and we'll see later, this is during her first 30 days after her wedding. Yurchatsu espenem, they are entitled, if Yom Kippur falls out, at that time, so they're entitled to wash their faces. Vachaya, the woman who just gave birth, Tino es Hasandal, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer feels that she should wear shoes. She is very sensitive to cold, and that will enable her to warm up. Vachachomim Ostrim, the Chomim feel that it's not necessary, therefore she is forbidden. O'oichel kekoyseves agaso kamo kegarnisa, eating this quantity of food. Kosevis is a date, gasa, a large date. Komoa ukigarinosa means not only eating a date, but the size of a date with its pit. So a quantity of food that is the equivalent of a date, a large date with its pit. Vahashesim lo lugmov, or someone who drinks a beverage amounting to his own cheek full of liquid. chayav. That would be a Yom Kippur violation. By the way, that carries with it a kores penalty. Different foods can add up to a kosefis quantity. In other words, when one speaks of violating Yom Kippur, it doesn't mean you eat a full day quantity of one particular food. It could be a peanut butter cup, which is made of chocolate and peanut butter, two different food items. Or it could be an egg with some vegetables, where all together you have just one day quantity of food substance there. Likewise, all mashkin, if you have some beverage that's a mixture of, you have cocoa and milk, and it's a cheek full. Not just pure milk, but it's a mixture. Nevertheless, that equal a cheek full will be a Yom Kippur violation. Ha'eichel v'sheise ein mitzdarfen. Food, if you have a half quantity of, let's say, date food and a half cheek full of beverage, we don't say that they equal a full quantity of violation vis-a-vis Yom Kippur. The Gemara asks, in the Mishnah the term osur was used. Osur, onesh kores hu. Osur means forbidden, but there's a more appropriate term that should have been used, that when it comes to achila and shtia, it should have said, ha'eichel b'Yom Kippur is onesh kores, is chayev kores. Kores being a very severe form of punishment. There are different opinions as to what exactly kores is. It could be dying young, it could be children dying on the parent, etc., whatever. We, in general, in Gemara markings, we don't translate kores, we simply refer to it as the kores penalty. So isn't that, wouldn't that be a bit more accurate? The Gemara answers, Amar of Ila, v'itema, rabirmiya, Loi nitzrucha ella lachatzi shiur. The reference to, or the Mishnah in referring or using the word osur is a reference to a Yom Kippur violation whereby you didn't eat a full quantity. Namely, if you don't eat a full quantity, so there is no kores penalty, but nevertheless, it is forbidden. So that's the point of the Mishnah. You'll notice, by way of marking, something rather dramatic happens here. We have a bracketed section, and you'll notice this is a rather long bracketed section, taking you down about a quarter of the way down the top of Ayin Dalet Omid Aleph. In order to appreciate this, so we have a reference to notice the Rashi that is found on Ayin Dalet Omid Aleph, a little more than halfway down. You see, the Rashi Dibur Masav Chol Hecha De Onush Kores Lo Toni Osur, and Rashi says the Kashya Loch Liel Osur Onush Kores Hu. What is Rashi doing? If you look at the Gemara there on Ayin Dalet Omid Aleph at the end of the bracketed section, the Gemara is raising a question back, referring back to the point that we're holding by right now in the Gemara. In other words, we just finished dealing with the question of why does the Mishnah say Osir when it could have used the Lashon, it should have said Onesh Kores. We gave an answer. Well, because the Mishnah is referring to Chatzi Shiur, a half quantity, and therefore Kores is not warranted. But what was bothering the Gemara? The Gemara asks, why didn't you use the word osur? Why did you use the word osur? You could have said kores. So the Gemara, after the bracket, says, v'chol hecha da'onish kores lo toni osur. And where a violation is punished by kores, the word osur is not used. It is. And the Gemara then gives you a Tanaic source where you see something is chayev in kores and the word osur is used. So that is the basic flow of the Gemara. Within the brackets, the Gemara deals with the topic of Chatzi Shi'ur. So we now continue with the bracketed section. Ha nicha leman de'omar Chatzi Shi'ur osur min haTorah. You can say that the Mishnah that speaks about these prohibitions, that Yom Kippur is forbidden, is Osir in Achila and Shtia, and all of the things listed in the Mishnah seem to be of a Torah nature, Torah level prohibition. Certainly, it is Osir from the Torah to eat on Yom Kippur. That's if you assume that a Chatzi Shir is a Torah level prohibition. Elolaman diomar Chatzi Shir mutar min haTorah ma'iko lemeimar. But according to the opinion that says that a half quantity is something the Torah does not prohibit. So how do you explain the word osir in the Mishnah? Now we have an internal brackets, three lines, let's skip them. Moide reish lakish, sha'osir midrabanan. The word osir in the Mishnah is legitimate because even if you say, like reish lakish holds in the bracketed section, that chatzi shiur is allowed from the Torah standpoint, nevertheless, on a rabbinic level, you are not allowed. And that's why the word osir is used. It's saying it's osir. Chatzi Shir, which is the subject of the Mishnah, is also on a rabbinic level. Let's go back to the bracketed, to this internal brackets. We mentioned just before that there were two opinions regarding Chatzi Shir, this concept of partial quantity. De Itmar, Chatzi Shir. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Osir Minatorah. Reish Lakish Omar Mutar Minatorah. Reish Lakish says that the Torah itself prohibits chatzi shiur. Hence, as we the term also can appear in the Mishnah. Reish Lakish says that from the Torah standpoint, there is no prohibition of eating a half quantity. Hani chol Rabbi Yochanan. So the Mishnah makes perfect sense according to Rabbi Yochanan that Yom Kippur is forbidden in eating and drinking, even a partial quantity. Elo Reish Lakish ma'ikul ameima. Reish Lakish says mutter. He says the Torah doesn't ban. So how can the Mishnah say usser? How can the Mishnah say forbidden? The Gemara answers, Moide Reish Lakish, Sha'asr, Midr Rabbanan. Reish Lakish concedes that it's forbidden on a rabbinic level. Ihachi, if that be the case, Lo Nechayev Alei Korban Shvuah. If there is a rabbinic prohibition on Chatzi Shiur, so there should be no sacrifice regarding a vow violation associated with it. Let us make it very clear that if a person vows to do something or not to do something, let's say he vows to do something that the Torah or that is forbidden to do, the vow doesn't take hold because a vow or an oath, a vow, the Shavuos and Nedarim, they're different realms, but we say that if a person is bound by the Torah, Nishba v'oymed mehar Sinai, where someone is already forbidden in doing something, he's pre-forbidden, he's already forbidden, a vow does not take hold, because a vow takes hold only on those things that you make forbidden. But if this is so, like Reish Lakish claims, that Chatzi Shiur is forbidden already, it's rabbinically forbidden, so then a vow concerning Chatzi Shiur shouldn't take hold. For example, if someone says he vows to eat a half shiur of pig meat, let's say then he goes and eats the half shiur of pig meat, is he considered in violation of the vow? And of course, we didn't mention, but one who violates vows is subject to different penalties. So would he be subject to those penalties? Is that a legitimate vow? Well, if Reish Lakish is correct that it's osir, chatzi shiur is osir midrabanan, there should be no room for the vow to take effect. And of course, we're going to have a bracketed section in which we're going to see that the vow does take effect. The Gemara will answer this question, and here we skip by using the brackets to skip. You skip to the second line from the top of Ayin Dalulam Aleph, and the Gemara answers. And the structure of this answer is very unusual because it's presented in a type of the Lashon is used for Chitema, which usually indicates something that's not accepted or doesn't stick. Here, this is the response. The response is, V'chitema kevon de'islei heter min haTorah, since you're dealing with something, namely chatzi shiur, as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, which is something that the Torah does allow, kochayel korban shvua, the sacrifice needed for vow violation is binding. In other words, in simple terms, the Shvuah does take effect. Why? Because of that which Reish Lakish himself claims, that Chatzi Shir is not something that the Torah prohibits. It's only rabbinically prohibited. And since it's only rabbinically prohibited, if one vows concerning a Chatzi Shir, it will take effect. Even if you vowed concerning something that is rabbinically forbidden, nevertheless, from the Torah perspective, it's something that's allowed. And therefore, the vow can take effect. Remember, we said the rule before is that vows take effect only on things that you make usur, that you make forbidden by virtue of the vow. So, you made it forbidden by vowing on it, something that the Torah itself would have allowed. So what did we just do in the Gemara? We gave Reish Lakish's explanation for the Mishnah. Yom Kippur is Osir Bachilu Ishtia, and the word Osir is appropriate even if something is merely Osir Midrabbanan. We then asked, five lines from the bottom, E Hachi Lo Nechayv Le Korban Shvuah, if there is a prohibition that is associated with Chatzi Shir, then the Korban Shvuah, the sacrifice for Shvuah, for vow violation, should not apply. Because vows and their accompanying sacrifices for one who violates them applies only to things that are otherwise allowed that you made Usur. But Reish Lakish is saying that Chatzi Shir is already Usur, it's Usur Midrabbanan. We continue in the bracketed section, which shows you how Reish Lakish tells us that Chatzi Shiur, in fact, is subject to Korban Shvuah. Al-Motnan, so yet it says, Shvuah Shelo Eichal, a person swears he's not going to eat. V'ochal Nevelus Atreifus Shkotzer Remosim. And he eats all kinds of forbidden things, like nevelus, unslaughtered meat, or meat that's unfit because it's classified as a trefa, or shkatzur musim, other creepy crawler creatures that the Torah forbids. And someone swore he's not going to eat them. Chayev. He is guilty of a korban. He's guilty of a vow. The vow, if he goes ahead and eats them, so he has to bring a sacrifice. Reb Shimon poter. Reb Shimon says, no, he is exempt. V'avinon bo amai chayev. Why does the Tanakhama say that one who vowed not to eat pig meat, and he goes ahead and eats it, why is he in violation of the oath? Mushba v'yomeid mehar sinaihu. He's already bound from the giving of the Torah not to eat pig meat. Rav Ushmuel Rav Yochanan, the Amri. Well, these three all said one pshat. They said an explanation. We don't have to emphasize them in our current discussion, but they said the case where the vow takes hold is b'kailul dvorim hamutarim im dvorim asurim. You have a person here that swore he's not going to eat pizza, he's not going to eat ice cream, and he's not going to eat pig meat. So in his vow, he included mutter things. He included allowed things. One is allowed to eat pizza. He swore not to eat pizza and also not to eat pig meat. So since the vow took hold on part of his comment, it takes hold regarding the pig meat also. But if he would have sworn solely concerning the pig meat, so the shvua would not have gotten off the ground. For Reish Lakish, we dashed on line because we want to emphasize Reish Lakish in our current discussion. Reish Lakish Omar, Iata Moitse. Hello, you won't find a vow of this nature regarding pig meat taking effect, Ella, unless you have two possibilities. Ella, b'meforesh chatzi shir v'alibad rabbanan, one who swears explicitly, meforesh means explicitly swears, I will not eat a half quantity of pig meat. According to the opinion of the rabbanan, there's another opinion, we'll see Rabbi Akiva, if someone specifies, I won't eat a half quantity. Let's assume that a quantity of pig meat would be an olive quantity. He swears, I'm not going to eat a half olive, a quantity of pig meat. He goes ahead and eats a half olive quantity. Well, the vow will take effect. Oy bestam, or a person doesn't say explicitly half quantity, but he swears, I will not eat pig meat. According to Rabbi Kiva, by saying, I will not eat, you are including half quantity in your intention. And And that's what it means. Elabistam valiba Rabbi Kiva damar adam oiser atzmo bekolshu. When a person enunciates, "I swear I will not eat," you're including in that even a half quantity. But now the main point is, and Rashi spells this out. You can see in the narrow lines on the upper part of Ayin Dalet Aleph, we've dashed underlined the main point. And let's read it together. In the Rashi, Ve'i svira leila Reish Lakish the chatzishir osu midrabanan. If Reish Lakish really holds that a half quantity is rabbinically prohibited, Hechi muki la laha de tani chayev. How can he establish the Tanaic source that said regarding the eating of nevelas and treifas, and we use the example of pig meat, as being guilty ba'oichel chatzishir? In the case where he eats half a quantity, where he swore concerning half a quantity, v'arei afalov mushba, even concerning that, he is duty-bound, v'shum lav de lo sosu. The Torah says, you shall not veer off of that which the rabbis command. So if the rabbi said not to eat a half shiur, so you're already bound from a posuk in the Torah to heed the words of the Rabbanan, do not eat half a shiur. If that be the case, half a shiur is already proscribed from the Torah, so to speak. Therefore, as we said before, a vow takes hold only on things that otherwise are allowed. How can this vow take effect when it's something that when the half quantity is not allowed? The Gemara answers, v'chitema, kevon de isle heter mina Torah. If you say, since it has a heter from the Torah, meaning, as Reish Lakish said earlier, chatzi shiur is not something the Torah itself prohibits. The rabbis prohibit it. Therefore, kochayil korban shvuah, a korban shvuah can take, there's room for it to take effect. It's considered something that you are making forbidden. Now, in this bracketed section, the Gemara attempts to challenge that answer. But the challenge is not going to be successful. So we're going to be left with what we just answered. The formal answer is that the reason, according to Reish Lakish, that a shvuah concerning a chatzi shiur can take effect is because it's something that from the purely Torah perspective is something that is allowed. Therefore, there's room for your vow to take something that's allowed, and you can make it usur. That is the circumstance necessary to create a vow, and one who violates it will be chayav a korban shvuah. In the brackets, the Gemara seems to challenge. We just said that since something is mutar min haTorah and usur only midrabbanan, so a shvuah can take effect. V'hatnan, we have the following Tanaic source. This is a long question. Shvuas ha'edus is another form of vow. This has to do with bearing witness, and a witness who claims he doesn't know testimony. So he has to. He's presented with a vow that you have to vow that you don't know the testimony, and if you in fact do, and you violated this vow, so you are penalized. You're punished for that violation. This is called shvuah sa'edus. So it's a shvuah that has to do with testimony. Shvuah sa'edus eina nehegias ela beru'yid lahayid. One is not said to be a violator of this type of testimony vow unless you are fit to say testimony. V'havino balimute mai. And we ask, well, who is not fit to say testimony? So Rav Pav Amar Limutei Melech, a king, and we're not going to get into this topic now, but it's the subject of a sugya in Maseches Sanhedrin. A king is not someone who says testimony. And therefore, a king who, let us claim, he didn't know testimony under oath, and he really did, he would not be in violation of this vow. Rav Acha Bar Yankiv Amar Limutei Mesachik Bekuvya. We dashed underline this because this is the focus of our discussion. Mesachik Bekuvya, loosely translated, would mean a gambler, a person who plays dice. He's a gambler. V'ha Mesachik Bekuvya, and now, by the way, what's the problem involved in gambling? Again, here we're not going to get into details and certainly not into practical applied law, but just in general terms, Mesachik Bekuvya is a form of theft. In other words, you're going to take someone who lost the gamble, and the guy didn't really want to part with his money, and you're taking it from him because you won the bet, or you won the gamble. Now, we said it's a form of theft. Is that forbidden as theft from the Torah? No. The Torah's vision of theft is where you actively grab away something from somebody who is holding onto his possession. Again, we're presenting things in very simplistic terms, but that's all that's necessary for right now in the immediate understanding of the sugya. So, v'homesachik b'kuvya midoraiso mechsechosi. The Gemara says that from a Torah standpoint, he is not a thief, so he's fit to say testimony from the Torah level. V'rabonon hu depaslu. The rabbi said he is unfit. And what do we see? We see someone that's unfit only on a rabbinic level, the lo kochayla ole shvua, and yet the vow doesn't take effect. Now, right before this internal brackets, we try to say, well, since chatzi shir is allowed from the Torah, and it's also only midrabbanan, so the vow does take effect, here you see something that's of a rabbinic nature, and the vow is not taking effect. The Gemara answers, Shiny Hossam, that case is different. The case of the gambler and testimony, the vow relating to testimony is a different situation. The Omar Kral, the Pasuk says, Im lo yagid. That's a Pasuk regarding testimony. When does the vow take place? When is the vow considered a vow and subject to violation? That's if he doesn't testify when he could have testified. V'hai lav bar hagoda hu klal. But this guy can't testify. The mesachik b'kuvya, he cannot testify. And since he cannot testify, even if it's only from a rabbinic standpoint, but since he cannot testify, so the vow does not apply to him, as Rav Acher bar Yankov said. So that's a technical exclusion, we'll say, with regard to testimony-related vows. However, in the general realm of shvuos, as we answered before, if something is allowed from the Torah, and it's only rabbinically prohibited, there is room for the vow to take hold. Therefore, in conclusion, as Reish Lakish said, Chatzi shir is osur midrabbanan, and that's why the Mishnah used the word osur. As far as someone who swears not to eat a half quantity of pig meat and goes ahead and eats it, he is considered in violation. And how is that when it's something that the Torah would have allowed? Well, that's the answer. It's allowed since the Torah allows it, and you made it osur through your vow. True, it might be osur already midrabbanan, but that's not enough to prevent the shvuah from taking effect. And this is what the Gemara had answered on the second, third line from the top of this omid. So with that, the understanding of the word osur is in place, and Reish Lakish's answer also is acceptable. The next piece of Gemara raises the question, as we introduced earlier, just because the Mishnah uses the word usur, could that not in fact refer to a full quantity as well? Just because kores is applicable, it doesn't mean that the word usur can't be used. So Mirza Shem, next time we will pick up with that point. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.